Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the June 2021 Online Home Education Conference.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm so glad to be here and have the opportunity to teach this class. So when I was a young girl, young teenager, so my older siblings are 6 years older and up, and then I have a younger brother. And so everyone was out of the house by the time I was 12. And so every Sunday, my mom and dad and my brother and I would have a game night. That was sort of the tradition. We'd play things like Boggle and Scrabble and Canasta. My mom was Swiss, so Canasta was like her thing. And she used to joke that if we let her use Swiss and German words, she could beat us in Scrabble, which is, I think, is a fair point. But so I ended up, when I went to college my freshman year, Sunday nights were my most homesick nights because I missed that opportunity to have that time with my family to play games and things. And so it really had an impact in my life. And then years later, when I got married, you know, I started buying games for my own household and the typical ones, Monopoly and Payday and things like that, the Milton Bradleys. And I did not enjoy Monopoly. My husband was a horrible cheater at it. And so it just wasn't enjoyable. And he doesn't like board games. So I had to wait until my kids were old enough to get to play. So board games have then played a very big part of our family's life ever since that time. And when we were stationed in Okinawa, we would have typhoon season for most of the summer. And that was one of our favorite times because the bases would lock down and you were stuck at home. And so we played a lot of games and my children have fond memories of that time together as a family and are laughing. And, you know, one of our favorite games at the time was Snorta and it made us laugh so hard. And so, and then when my oldest daughter was telling me that when she grew up and her marriage was starting to feel a little shaky, she remembered that games, board games and stuff, brought us so much joy and happiness. So she started buying games and things. Didn't fix the marriage, but she still has a really good time with playing games. So August, 2 years ago about, I was sitting there at the table waiting for my family to come to play this board game called Azul. And I should say that since that time, my one of my sisters married what we call a professional board gamer. He works for a company and designs board games. He's from Sweden. And so the company is actually out of Czechoslovakia. So most of the games from their company will go to Essen, which comes in October before they'll ever hit the United States. So usually we get to hear about, oh my goodness, this really great game called Planet has just come out. And then I have to wait a whole year. He has it. We get to play at his house and we have to wait until it comes to America. So there's a whole series of, they're called Euro games. And these Euro games, a lot of them tend more towards teaching about something or being based on a something. So like you're going to get Copenhagen, which is from, it's based on the waterfront homes in Copenhagen, or Tewatinisuya and Teotihuacan and Tikanyu and Imhotep and some of these others that were based, that have come out of Europe into the United States. So as I was sitting there waiting for everybody to come, I started reading the box, and the box on Azul says that this is based on the tiles that the Moors introduced into Portugal. And then the Portuguese king fell in love with it and he started decorating, you know, different palaces and things in Portugal. This is what it says: introduced by the Moors, Azulejos, originally white and blue ceramic tiles, were fully embraced by the Portuguese when their king, Manuel I, on a visit to the Alhambra Palace in southern Spain, was mesmerized by the stunning beauty of the Moorish decorative tiles. And I thought, huh, Who knew? I had no idea that there were, that they came, you know, that the Moors brought them into Portugal. In fact, I didn't really know a lot about Portugal, Portuguese tiles. And so then I started, I'm on my phone waiting for my family. I start looking them up and I'm like, guys, look at this. Look at this. You know, look how gorgeous these are. So then we learned that Azul was based on these beautiful tiles. And I thought, I wonder how many other games you could actually learn from, or that you could, that would inspire you into something. And so I decided to do a co-op game class where we, it was a geography class. And so basically I set up 12 games. So it was a 12-week class. And each week I would have the kids, they did a report. They would stand and give the, they actually give the report to the other kids. And then I would teach some other things that they didn't cover. And then we would move on to the board game. And so in doing that, we were able to incorporate not just playing a game. We were able to incorporate the education of the countries or regions that we were talking about, as well as having some time for speech, which for my introverts, that was quite a something to have to be able to stand in front of these other kids and, you know, express themselves. And as well as do, I didn't require research paper, but it did require them to go in and do some research on their own. Some of the times we did a game that was specific to a something, like Azul is specific to Portugal. Copenhagen is specific to the Dutch. And, you know, Rijkult would be something that's specific to Iceland. So we picked these things that were specific, but then we did another game that was actually based on the Amazon River. And so each child picked a country that touched the Amazon River. So whether it was, you know, Brazil or Peru or El Salvador, just kind of going down. And so each child actually gave a little report on those countries. Well, we did Ticket to Ride of Great Lakes. We were talked about Canada and we discussed why there was so much population around the Great Lakes and the border of Canada and such little population in the northern parts of Canada. So we got to have that discussion about our northern neighbor. Trekking, we did trekking the national parks. And so with that, we had a chance to actually discuss different national parks. And it actually inspired my family to go try some of the other parks that we hadn't been to at that time. I set that age limit to 10 to 14 simply because rules had to be learned quickly. And there was the gameplay. One family snuck in a 9-year-old and it was probably halfway into the class. I was like, how old are you exactly? And he was much younger, which explained why he wasn't catching on to the games as quickly as the other students. So this opened up our eyes, though, to really looking at what are some board games that will teach us things and some of the board games that inspire us. And there was a quote that actually inspired me to make this class. It was from Jennifer Stone, and it was a forum entry at BoardGameGeek.com. If you're familiar with BoardGeek.com, it is kind of like all games, or at least it has, just to give you an idea, there's 1,275 pages with 100 games listed per page listed there. So choosing or finding a game is not a problem. You've got that big of a database to go to. But what she said was, in her introduction, she states that through my experience with my 5 children and myriad of children I have taught and worked with, I agree. Since I discovered BGG, my whole outlook on the world of games has changed. Being a homeschool family, I looked for ways to make learning fun. I bought geography games, phonics games, math games, you name it. They weren't fun. They were work. It seems that education is thought of as something that has to be done to a child, as if a child's mind is an empty vessel that must be filled with facts, numbers, letters. A blatantly educational game is one that takes a subject and attempts to wrap a game around it. What child in their right mind wants to play a game at home about something they're spending their time studying in school? Game time at home is meant to be relaxing and fun, not another study session. Games that are educational are the ones that work a child's mind, or an adult's, for that matter, like a muscle, to be exercised and strengthened. It's this type of material workout that helps a child to succeed in any form of study. So this year with the pandemic and my daughter moving in with us with my special needs granddaughter, my eyes were also open to what we can do to teach in the home. And I don't have a lot on the preschool because mostly we're just kind of starting with her, but because of her special needs, she has a lot of occupational therapy and physical therapy and speech therapy. And so it's been interesting because we're finding that there are games that are great for occupational therapy or for her actually in education. I'm just going to show a couple of those. For example, this one's called Honeybee Tree. So what does Honeybee Tree do for her? Well, her occupational therapist spends a lot of time having her pick up little things with her fingers. And the nice thing about this game, have you played Kerplunk? I would ask. I don't know how many people have played it. But in Kerplunk, you have like this middle and you've got all these little sticks that go through with a group of marbles that go to the top. So the idea is you pull out the stick and then you hope the marbles don't fall or that you don't get stuck with a lot of marbles. So one of the difficult things, if you can't manipulate your fingers very well, is a marble is round and it's hard to keep a hold of. So the nice thing about this little game is it has these little bees. So it actually helps her teach her pinching. And then as she moves it, she's learning to manipulate her fingers. And so that was kind of one of those expansions that we were able to see success in as her occupational therapist is trying to get her to hide tiddlywink discs. Because I don't know what else to call them. But when I was a kid, these little round discs that you would flip. So her occupational therapist is constantly having her pick them up, move them into her hand and hide it, and then present it. And so in doing that, she has to learn how to try to individualize fingers, which is very difficult for her. Another game. This game is ultimately silly, and I love it. So it has these little cupcakes and she builds cupcakes with it. And so it's sort of like a mini puzzle game, but each of the pieces comes out. And so you're putting together, according to some cards, the princess's cupcake. And each of those is designed according to whether it's Jasmine or Rapunzel or Belle or whoever. So those give her additional manipulation time. So, and if you guys want to talk any more about using these as learning tools for those young preschool age, we can do that in the breakout at the end. But most of this is actually for your, kindergarten, first grade up. So even high school. When my youngest was in kindergarten, she had a really, really hard time with money. And we would spend so much time saying, this is a nickel, this is a quarter, this is a penny, this is a dime, over and over and over again. And she wasn't getting it. And so the teacher said, you should get this game. We use it in the classroom. So I went and bought this game, allowance game. And it was boring. She was bored. She didn't want to play it. She never wanted to play it because she found it boring. I found it boring. So it just sits at the very bottom of our closet because we're not using it. And that's the thing that I wanted to get away from. I don't want games that we're not going to play. When we had a change of duty station to come back to Virginia Beach, we decided to go through our board games and get rid of what we didn't play with. And it was 5 large boxes, giant boxes full of games. And that didn't count the ones that this kid said, I'm taking this to college with me, or I want to keep that one, et cetera. So we had a lot of games. And so I wanted to be able to teach my daughter in sneaky ways, ways that you don't realize you're learning, but you are. And so I figure education through play is, I don't know, I'm all about playing and getting it to sink in, maybe because I'm a kinetic learner myself or kinesthetic learner myself. So I like that touchy-feely learning that way. The things that board games can actually teach your children are they can teach skills. They can teach new information. They can solidify facts that you've studied and now you're going to go on and just want to really get that into their brains. They can teach spatial relationships, encourage creativity in a child. There are STEM games that can actually teach various aspects of STEM, like the robot alley, or encourage further study into other educational areas, which is what I brought up with the geography, something that makes you want to say, oh, I want to know more about where that came from, or even to have it be a culmination of, you know, we did the hard work, now let's just have fun with what we had, what we've learned. So I'm going to talk about a few of these as going kind of through some of those. As far as teaching skills, we have some of these over here that are actually games that will quote unquote teach. So Prime Climb, it's about you move up through mathematical skills. You move up and down on the board using numbers. Ingenious is a skill-based putting tiles in such a way as to be able to cover the board. A little bit like Blockus, if you've ever played Blockus, where you're actually trying to, you know, fill the board with your parts before and block everyone else. Dabble was one that I was recently introduced to, and I was really surprised. It is a game where they take, well, we'll talk about exactly what it does later, but basically it's about spelling. It's about words, 2-letter, 3-letter, 4-letter, 5-letter, 6-letter words. And Wingspan, we'll talk about that one. I'll show you that one a little more in detail. One of my very favorite Euro games. Artwork is beautiful, and every card teaches you about the bird, teaches you nests, and teaches you eggs, and teaches you the where the bird is located, information about that. Like I said, I'll show you that later. Photosynthesis, where you learn about how light can affect things. There are other games that do the same, similar something. But you've got your Ticket to Rides that can teach you geography, or 10 days, 10 days in the USA, 10 days in India, 10 days in Europe, 10 days in Africa. Those games are all geography. And you learn where things are as you're moving your pieces through the country. I mean, the continent, sorry. And then over here, like I said, have games that inspire you. You say, what do the castles of Mad Van Ludwig have to do with anything? Mad King Ludwig. And that was one of those things where we got to talk about Bavarian castles, as well as why is he called the Mad King? You know, what happened to him to get him to be put into that niche? So then we have spatial awareness. And as we learn spatial awareness, there are other skills we learn as far as thinking ahead and how will what I'm doing now affect the future, et cetera. And then we go over to this more spatial awareness. And then cooperative games. And what is there to learn in cooperative games? That's where you start really getting into your social gaming, things that will help your child to develop better social skills with others. So some of the social skills that you learn through board gaming, one, negotiation. I don't know if you guys have ever played a co-op game, but everybody has a separate job in the game. So for example, in Pandemic, One person will be a doctor. One person's going to be the flight, take care of the flights. One person's going to be the, I'm trying to remember all the different parts, epidemiologist or something, but because there's multiple pandemics. But when you have that and you're trying to get rid of that pandemic across the world, you're trying to use one another's skills. What can happen is you can end up with a person who wants to always be leader. And they sit there and they tell everybody, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do this. And the problem in doing that is one of the skills that, at least in the classes I've gone to about leadership, are how well do you utilize your people in order to have your organization work? So if I'm the leader, I should be doing some delegating and saying, here's your skill, here's your skill, here's your skill. My husband is a master at this in the Navy. He is always in charge of something. And it's like, you know, you're in charge of the nurses, you're in charge of the corpsmen, you're in charge of doing this, and you get the materials and bring it all together. And so learning how to work together to make a cohesive group, so that you don't have somebody who is being underutilized, which also kind of goes with the art of compromise. I personally feel the art of compromise is a skill that we are losing in our society because we don't learn how to say, I'll give a little and you give a little, and we can come to an agreement. In our family, there's 5 children, 2 adults. So playing board games is a compromise all the time because it's like, what do you want to play? But I want to play this. And so we have to learn to say, okay, it's your turn. Or I respect what you're saying, but I'm not really interested in doing that. Or as my husband would say, I value that at a this. And to get him to play, we usually have to play a game called Valeria because he loves that. He values that as a 9. So you negotiate, you learn how to compromise with one another. You learn how to lose. You can learn how to win graciously and you can learn how to lose graciously. And as you learn to lose, you learn to develop resiliency. And so that as those things are, you learn good sportsmanship. It's like, so I lost this time, but it's not going to be every time that will take place. You're going to learn how to understand the reasoning processes. And this is something I try to do with my daughter that's 13, because in our family, we have the bonus child who's playing board games with all the 20-somethings. And so it's tricky for her because there's a lot of life experience that she doesn't have and that they do. And so whenever she loses, and sometimes she loses by a really grand amount, like we just played periodic a few days ago and, you know, she was a good 20 plus points behind. When that happens, I sit down with her and I talk about the strategies. Why did this happen? How did everyone else get bundled up here and you were behind? Did you think to do this or do that? Or, you know, so she starts processing, oh, this is how I can do better. This is how I can be better. So we don't say, ha, 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 you're the loser, we're the winner. We say, how can we help you so that you have that opportunity in the future to also win? And there are a lot of games as we played them over and over again. She went from being at the very, very tail end to now within being, you know, 2 to 5 points behind or ahead too. So they learn how to strategize. So how is this going to take me down the path to where I want to be? You know, and that's a life skill. We think a lot of us who are homeschooling, we do it because we feel the education we are able to give our children is going to help them to become better in the future. And so in doing that, along with that in board games, when you start thinking about how is this going to affect me 5 plays down the road, or, you know, just what's my end goal going to be? How do I get there? So it's like a mini goal setting, right? And one of the things one of my daughters had learned is that in learning to do this strategizing and stuff, as she's gone into the workforce recently and had to deal with some negative behaviors in her life, she's always able to say, if I say this, it can be interpreted this way if I go down this road. But if I do it this way, it will go this way. And she can actually look down those roads. And she said, Mom, I think it's because of all the time I spent strategizing over a game. How am I going to get this ultimate something if I don't actually make a plan to get there? Children learn patience. You hope they learn patience, right? You hope they don't pick up the board and throw it. That would be the goal. Sometimes, like, for example, when we play Dominion, you know, the young one will sit there while my 23-year-old, he's going, and I'm playing this card so I can play this card, so I can do this card, which will let me do this. And she's just going, oh, my good heavens. And so, but she sits there patiently and waits until it's her turn. And so she's had to learn a lot of patience in this household. So, problem solving, how can I just even with that hive, the honey tree game, you know, how do I keep this from happening? If I'm playing Jenga, how do I make it not fall over? What do I need to do so that I can be successful? You learn how to detect patterns, which would be like your blockus and your hive. Hive is an amazing game for seeing how things are going to flow in your mind before you're actually doing it, planning ahead. And controlling impulses. This is another you would hope this happens, right? I have been blessed that I have not had a single family member ever throw the board game. So, or the pieces or anything. You know, the worst we had was we were playing Anomia and my little one had her cards taken from her and she just went, oh, why, like that. And so now that's a family joke. You know, when something goes wrong, we're like, oh, why. And so it put that fun memory, but also the kids have just learned that you just be patient. Don't lose your cool. It'll be fine. It's just a game. And then I talked a little bit about it earlier, but metacognition, understand the why. Why did you do that? Tell me about it. Because one thing, as children are learning things, I don't know about you, but when I was in school, the math teacher is always having me turn around and teach somebody else how to do the problems, right? And that's how I learned the best, or in grammar or whatever, because as I was repeating what I learned, I was solidifying it to me. And so as we are doing those things, like I said with my daughter, tell me why. Why did you make that choice? Why did you put together, I'm trying to think of a game really quick. Okay, like Reichelt. Why did you make a decision to plant those? You know, why did you pick planting instead of buying seeds? Why did you, you know, so she can explain to me and then I can validate where she's coming from. Because I feel strongly that we all have our strengths and we all have our weaknesses. And it's okay. And then we learn how to grow and develop from one another. So another thing that we can learn in homeschooling, as homeschooling moms and dads, is what kind of style our children learn it in. So a student who has handouts and lectures and verbal summaries, they're auditory learners, right? They need to hear those things. And if you have a person who makes their mind maps and their Venn diagrams and their color-coded lists or their post-it notes and things, those are our visual learners, the people that need to see it. I got to see it to catch it. And then we have those who want our hands-on. They need the manipulatives. They need to be able to, I don't want to just learn about the seed. Let me plant the seed. Let me see the seed. Let me do it. And board gaming really fits in with those kinesthetic learners, because you have those hands-on experiences. If when you do movement, when you're repeating things, you know, that helps to solidify things in your mind a little better. The kinesthetic learner wants to experiment. They want to try new things. Some consider it a game and some just consider it a manipulative, but let me just grab this. So these are called snap circuits. And in it, there's an instruction book. And my daughter learned a lot about electricity and how energy moves in order to have an end result. So doorbells will ring, lights will go on, a radio will play, a whirligig will flash, a Christmas tree lights up. So snap circuits are, I guess you could consider them an individual game. So they're learning to accomplish something step by step. So that's a really great game for a kinesthetic learner to be able to feel those pieces, see how it all works, and then learn from it. So other than learning how to lose, board games teach some other important social skills. Playing a board game with peers, it requires children to learn to pay attention to what others are doing. I don't know how many times you've played board games where somebody has just gone off in space and you're just like, it's your turn, honey. And so, you know, kids playing with kids, they kind of get that opportunity to, I guess, be more interactive with one another. It's important that they learn how to communicate to each other. There are games where, like Codenames, where you're trying to use words to express this is what you're trying to find. And so you've got to be able to use those language skills in such a way that you can actually help them, you know, to understand where you are, where you're going. Taking turns. Sometimes I think I get cut off on the freeway because somebody didn't learn how to take their turn at the water fountain or something. I don't know. But I think that's a skill that we're losing. We're losing this idea that we can work together and it's okay for you to go and me to go and you to go. And then we all kind of work together and we get this nice flow, a nice flow of traffic, right? So competition, we've come to a place in our society where we say no competition, right? Everybody's gonna we're just not gonna compete. And I think this kind of goes back to the resiliency, you know, that you learn that it's okay to compete. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But the important thing is you give it your best as you're moving along. Board games are a way for lighthearted, casual, fun learning to take a turn. So before I go into showing you some of the games that I really, really like for teaching, I just want to kind of finish up with this quote. So somebody posted on BoardGameGeek, what do you use to teach your children using board games? And so there were a number of people who were answering what they thought. And this gentleman, this one struck a chord with me. He said, games must first be fun and replayable, and only then will kids actually want to play the games and will almost by default absorb the educational content the game may contain. Games can provide many educational opportunities, spatial reasoning, logical decision-making, risk versus reward analysis, simple mathematical concepts, estimation, probability analysis, etc., not to mention the opportunities for social interactions between students that may not normally occur in a typical schoolroom environment. And I think that nails it, because who wants to do the same thing over and over and over again if they can't enjoy it? And I think that's, I don't know if it's just my personality, but I think that we can enjoy life. We can have joy with life, with our families, with our children, in our learning. You know, I don't think Heavenly Father, I know that Heavenly Father is a joyful person. You hear it in the music, you see it in the beautiful things that are created around us. And so I will say that there are games that games are subjective. Board games, video games, card games, everything. Just like TV, just like books, it's very subjective. So as a parent, I've tried to give you kind of a resource of some choices you can have that will kind of guide you forward. But I'm not going to say that all of these are for everyone. So, you know, we have 7 people in our family and we all have 7 very different favorite games. So personally, for me, I am visual. I'm a visual person and I'm kinesthetic. I like to touch stuff. So Splendor is one of my favorite games because it's got stuff for me to touch. It's very visual. It's all out there, but it's not my husband's favorite for sure, you know. So one of my daughters doesn't like Boggle. She's like, I hate that game. I hate it. For me, Boggle's just like the words just pop out. Boom, 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 boom. I see them, you know, 6-letter words, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, that's just not fair. It's like playing Boggle with you is just pointless. But that's just how my brain works. So seeing the visual, planning it out, that's what I love. And I love random games. So one of the things in our family, so Dominion, when I was introduced to Dominion, it was by 2 brother-in-laws. And they came in and they said, we're going to use these cards and these cards and these cards. And they skunked me. It wasn't even fun. It was not fun. I hated it. I'm like, this is the stupidest game in the world. And I thought, how can it be stupid when so many people like it? Well, guess what? So many people like Monopoly, and I think it's the stupidest game in the world. But that's okay, right? Because that's subjective. You can like it. I don't. But that said, with Dominion, one of the great things is as they started making more and more and more of their games and having more add-ons, we started just randomizing. And so the rule in our house is it's got to be random. Boom. You know, every time it's 10 different cards. And my son, who's 23, he's such a good sport about everything. So before he went on his mission, we decided we were going to play for 2 weeks. We're playing Dominion, totally random. So we decided we're only going to play with gold earning cards. And so we pulled gold earning cards out. And this time we're only going to do ones. His favorite was cards that make you take cards that make you take cards. So our whole table was covered in cards. So much fun. We had such a good time. But the great thing about that randomizing is that at the time, the 11-year-old had an equal chance of winning because you're making choices, you're strategizing, and yet you've got to think out, if I do this, it will do this, it'll do this. And so she has a better chance of actually winning. So before I show you a few things, are there any questions to this point?
Yes. So there are some people that are really wanting you to like talk a little bit more about your handout.
Okay. I don't know what's on my handout. No, just kidding. I'm just kidding. So what I did was the first thing that you'll see are the Pinterest boards, right? So I constantly am updating when I find a board game that inspires me, or I find a website that inspires me, I just keep popping it into that Board Games That Teach. So that's kind of a web link you could go to, or you follow me, you know, don't follow me, but just kidding. So anyway, you know, sometimes I have good opinions, sometimes, you know. So that's why the Pinterest board is there, Board Game Geek. I'll just go ahead and share my screen at this moment, and we'll talk about some of those. I'm assuming that those are the main 3 that people want to know more about on the handout. Okay, so let me go ahead and do that. So when you go to Board Game Geek, the thing is that I love that they use geek because sometimes I kind of feel that about some of the people I've played board games with, but I really have found that a lot of the ratings and things on here are really to the point. So, for example, we've gotten to the point where if a game has a 7 or higher rating, We're pretty sure we're going to enjoy it. At least one member of our family will enjoy it, whether it's our strategist, whether it's our the creative people. For example, let's just take a look at Wingspan. So if I put Wingspan in here and I click on it, Wingspan has an 8.1 rating. That means that the people that use Board Game Geek have gone in and said, this game is on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, this higher rating. So when we see that, plus it's the type of game we like the manipulatives, we like the hands-on, we like pretty things. And so we have a better chance of actually taking a look at the physical game. Or sometimes we'll go through, we'll be at the game store. So I did list some places you can buy board games. Remember, Prime Day, this isn't like, you know, I'm not shooting for Amazon, but last year during Prime Day, I was able to get 8 different games for half the price they normally are. So Amazon Prime Day is coming up, and that's a good time to look for prices. Now, I also believe in getting a good deal. So, but for example, if we were, maybe I said, we really liked Forbidden Island. So you say, well, I want to know if, whoops, no, we don't want, okay. So you'll say, okay, well, it has a 6.8. I mean, that's pretty good. And what is the game about? So the nice thing about Board Game Geek, you see what ages it's for. You see about how long it will take. You see how many players. And then where it says weight, that means how hard is it to play? So if you've got this lower rate, it means you're going to be able to play with younger kids without a problem. So for example, Suro is an excellent game to play as a whole entire family. It's just a great game. But you'll see the weight is only 1.24. It's going to be easy for the family to do. Now, if you start looking at, I'm going to guess that this is a harder one, Brass. I'm trying to find one that's really more complex. I don't like having to think really hard in a game.
Is Risk considered a hard one?
Let's see. 1959. Nope. Not really. So I think.
Or Dominion, I don't know.
Yeah, because I think with Risk, it's still a strategy game. So I don't know where they come up with their complexity. We don't pay attention to weight as much as we pay to what their rating is. So that's how my family uses it. I'll show you when I go and share my my tabletop. I'll show you what the app looks like. It's a little bit easier to use. Plus, when you're at a game store, it's easy just to go, okay, here's a new game. You know, there's like some new pandemics. So it's like, well, what do people think of the new pandemic? And I can see right away kind of how it got rated or who liked it or didn't. The other nice thing is, like, for example, when I went to buy 10 Days in the USA, it was out of print. So you're actually able to go down here and see under the buy a copy where you might be able to find it. So if it is a rarer game, it's hard to find, you'll be able to see down here. So there's a game designer I really love. His name is Ryan Lauket. He's out of Utah and he creates story games. And I just love them because they include strategy and thinking. And then there's so many ways you can win. I love games where it doesn't matter if you're doing it this way or with that strategy or that strategy. Sort of like Seven Wonders. If any of you have played that game, you can either build a big military, have a big library, or just get a lot of buildings. And all of those have a chance of winning. So, like, let's say you wanted to buy Seven Wonders. And, you know, so it's going to show you a place where you can go. Okay. So that's sort of how Board Game Geek works. Then the other kind of fun thing is that you can set up your own, you know, kind of friends. You can, I have more than 111 games, but I got tired of putting them in. So, but my daughter told me that it was okay to put her list on there as well. So the one that says Athlendar, that's my 30-year-old. And she actually has gone to gaming conferences and things like that. And so has had a little bit more interaction through, I guess, a wider scope. So that's Board Game Geek. This one is called Board Game Arena. Board Game Arena, right now, I just signed up for another year. It was $24 on sale for the year. So what this allows you to do is actually set up board games to play with other people on the computer. So the thing I like about this is, one, I don't have to own all the games. On Board Game Arena, there's about 330 games you could play. So I mark the ones that are my favorites or that I want to play, and then I can actually look them up. I can go here to my favorites that I've marked and say, I want to play Dragonwood, which is a really great game to play with your family. I want to play Splendor. I'd like to play Sushiko. So I'm not actually having to go out and buy the game. Or if you want to play with your tweens and teens and you've got littles around, you can actually open these games and play them. And when you're done, you don't have to clean it. If you're not done, you don't have to clean it up. You just leave the arena. And then you can come back at another time. So that's really nice to not have to worry about cleaning up afterwards. The games that I have listed in mine, I've loved a lot of them. Tokonoko, it's based on when Japan, or it was based on the gift of a panda bear between two countries. And then you have to learn how to make a bamboo garden to feed it. There is Tokaido, one of my favorites. Tokaido is about the Tokaido Road and the things that the travelers, it was one of the main commerce paths in Japan. And so you get to see the different things that are on that route. You know, it talks about the hot springs and the hostels and the temples and things like that. So it gives you a chance to have that discussion about Tokaido Road and then actually play. Hanabi is a great one for, I don't know if I should say this, but on the games where we have to actually cooperate, my family kind of cheats, I think, sometimes. Okay, I'm not even going to say I think it. But Hanabi is one of those ones, especially with the littles, because you can only ask two questions. You can only say two things. These are all blue. Or these two or three are fives. And that's the only information you can give the person who's holding the cards that are showing it to you. Code 777 is similar. So sometimes they'll be like, okay, I'll throw away this one. You're like, no, no. You know, so like, oh, okay, I'll about throw this one away. Okay, you can do that, you know. So my family just has a good time with that. So that's Blue Arena.
There's a question in the chat. It says, on Board Game Arena, can your entire family play or is that individual play?
So the thing that, so when I paid the $24, the first thing to know is that these actually sites are free. You can get on there for free, but you cannot play a premium game for free. So as long as one person, the person hosting the game, is a premium holder, then they can invite the others. As far as how many can play, it depends on the manufacturer of the game. So like, let's say, for example, Splendor, we recommend playing it with three people. You can say how many people you want to play. Each player will have to have a different computer. Now, the trick is going to be if you're all in the same household. So like we play Wingspan with my daughters in Utah. And my daughter was in DC and I was here. So we were all playing that game on the computer. When you're in the same household, you do have to have the premium or it will tell you, hey, somebody's got the same IP address. because they're trying to warn you that someone's trying to steal into your network. And so you can't even try if you don't have the premium. So we just play one and then everyone logs in. So my son, my 23-year-old who's out at Brigham Young University, he will sometimes host a game night with the Elders Quorum, and then he hosts using that so that they can all play. So Tabletopia is another one that's very similar to that. I've bookmarked a lot. The thing about Tabletopia that I've noticed more is that new games that are coming out, such as games from Board and Dice, or games from Red Raven Games. This Artifacts is from Red Raven Games. They put out their Kickstarter games on here. So you can actually get a chance to see what's coming up. What is they're going to be released fairly soon. And then you can see if you like it before you buy it. And so that's kind of a nice thing. We played Carcassonne Hunters. I thought, oh, that would be interesting. Yeah, we didn't like it, but I love Carcassonne as far as the game goes. So that's a nice thing that you can do between the two. You know, Board Game Arena is cheaper, but Board Game Arena only has 330 games. Tabletopia right now this minute has 1,739 games to choose from. So you decide, you pay by the month. So you can decide this month I'm going to have it, this month I'm not. You know, during the summer months, maybe not during school. So, but those are places where you can play board games without actually owning the physical game. And then, like I said, you can make the decision. I really like this. You know, if I'm here and I played this Sushi Go Round or Sushi Go, I call it Sushi Go Round because living in Japan, we always went to the Sushi Go Round. So it sort of just comes out of my mouth that way. But so, you know, we decided we liked it, so we went and bought it, you know. And so it's just a great way to try before you buy, I guess. The other websites, so then I went through and I told you in that Excel spreadsheet, it has the name of the game, what ages you can play with, something to keep in mind that my board gaming brother-in-law told me about. When they put that date on, when they put the age on there, sometimes it's for legal reasons more than it is for whether or not children can actually play it. So it has to do with, like, for example, Thuro says ages 8 and up. Definitely can play with a 4 and a 5-year-old. But if they put 8 and up and the child decides to eat the taw, it's not their fault, right? So legally, it's not on them. So you might have a game that says 12 and up, and it really works well for most of the family, but it has smaller pieces. So I'm sorry, I just brought up chat. I didn't have that up already. So Cassie said, we have a collection of games that work way for playing over Zoom or something similar. The problem we found was with lag time sometimes. And the games where you're having to hold up the cards and then they're going, okay, pick the one. No, not that one. No, the other one, you know, or something like that. So that was one of the tricks with Zoom. But yes, I agree. I just wanted to give you a place where you can do that. Yes, Minecraft. My daughter loves Minecraft and stuff. My problem with Minecraft is that it becomes an individual. She's out there by herself, playing with people that she's not actually physically interacting with. And so when she's playing with Board Game Arena or whatever, I guess it's the same thing, but it's a lot better when you get on the phone and talk to them while you're playing. So I don't know, I guess maybe it's not much different, but I did mention that look at your local game stores. There are local game stores. We have one called Tower of Dice. And up in Richmond, there's a great one called One Eye Jacks. And in Utah, I've been to the one in American Fork, the one in Pleasant Grove, the one in Lehigh. So, and usually you can go in there and it's almost like rent board games that they have open. So you can give them a try there. Missouri Ogden. So Utah, they definitely it's like queen place of board gaming, I think. My three favorite games of all time, the ones that my kids say, Mom, we got to play what you want to play. It's going to be Splendor. Top 10 is better, to be honest with you, but I like Splendor. I'm visual, remember, so I like to touch. Copenhagen, I love this game. Azul, I love it. I love the feeling of the tiles in my hand. King Domino, I love it. I love Wingspan. Absolutely love it. I talked so much. I was going to show you some of this beautiful artwork that they have, how these games, this is what I like. What's next? I love that sound. Wingspan's board game. Actually, let me show you the cards. The board game is beautiful, but when you have these cards, they teach you, this is the kind of nest you're going to find. This is how many eggs they can lay. This is a fun fact about them. This is where you're going to find them over here. So it's just totally immersive in learning birds. After we bought this, my daughter decided, my 13-year-old, who was 12 at the time, decided she wanted a bird feeder for her birthday. And that bird feeder has brought us so much joy. And so taking the game to actual real life canvas. This is one of my favorite education games. The period is called Periodic. I was absolutely amazed at this game and how much you could learn just in playing it. Because not only does it have all the elements down here, this energy is how you move. And it totally works with your atomic number movement, whether, you know, your ionization, your atomic mass. So whether mass goes up or down, whether ionization is up and down, that's how the movement takes place. And in a short period of time, my 13-year-old learned where the elements were, not all of them, but the ones we were utilizing, just in no time at all. And the other great thing about that game is that it teaches you what those elements can create. So, for example, gas inside industrial light bulbs. And so you go and you collect the elements to make that, so you gain the card. One of these is steel. These are the compounds to make steel, carbon and iron. So, you know, you go pick up those elements. And like I said, I was just astounded at how fast, when I was in school, you know, we had to memorize them: hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, you know. And so what a great way. Math, I don't know if any of you have Young's, but games like Clumsy Thief and Sleeping Queens, those are great games for quick math, mental math. So with Clumsy Thief, you're trying to make numbers of 10. So you're going to be looking for a 3 and a 7, and you make your pile. You know, for Clumsy Thief, for the older, so you've got hundreds, so 60 plus 40. And then if you want to grab somebody else's, you might put another 40 on their 60, et cetera, and that's how you steal from each other. Sleeping Queens, you've got a king who will wake up the queen in your hand. In the meantime, to put cards down to get more, you make math facts. So 6 plus 2 is equal to 8. And then that's how you can draw more cards. So those are games that just help with the quick mental math. These are not all of our games. These are just ones that I tried to highlight educationally. If you want to teach, I mean, games are great for so much, but strategy, I didn't put the strategy games as far as educationally, but strategy games are just great for thinking things through and what's cause and effect. And like I said, Seven Wonders, you can strategize through military, you can strategize through the libraries, so different paths can still help you win. So, and sometimes you have to change your strategy, like Splendor. I think I'm on a certain path and someone takes the card before I get there. So as long as you've got multiple, isn't it kind of like life, we can have multiple choices and they still can get us to the same result, but.
Right, we have a question in the chat. So what are the best games for kindergarten? Easy reading and math ideas. This person loves Hi-Ho Cheerio and Uno.
Yes, and I did put Uno up here. My family likes Uno Spaz more than Uno itself, but we use games for those younger children, especially to solidify colors, numbers, things like that. One thing that's interesting is that sequential games are better for young children. So mathematically speaking, children who play games is, if it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and keeps going around like that, they actually do better mathematically than the ones like chutes and ladders, where it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 20, 21, 22, 23. Those actually don't mathematically work for children as well as having a continuity of numbers. So anytime you have to add on, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, like for exactly, I don't have it up here. Quacks of Quedlinburg. If you had Quacks of Quedlinburg, instead of just counting your next 10, you're going to say 24, 25, 26, 27. We played with our kids Quiddler. So I'm trying to think of things. We use Boggle for kindergarten, for learning letters and stuff. So rather than playing the game, we mix it up and we used it as a, can you find all the A's? Can you find all the E's, and score that way. 10 days in the USA can be played with kindergarten first grade because it's visual. It's, I'm going to move from this color to this color, extremely visual. I'm trying to think of some other ones. There's like card games that are great for that. Like I said, Sleeping Queens is awesome. Strawberry Games, I think they actually closed their children's lines, but they had a lot of great thinking games educationally that way. Clumsy Thief, excellent for the little ones. Some of them we do team ups, right? So that they can have success while they're still learning. Oh, it did come yet, but Dragonimo is a great one. So Dragonimo is the baby of King Domino and Queen Domino. This is a great one also for finger manipulation. Don't rock the boat. So Bananagrams, yes. Bananagrams is great. Scrabble Junior, not so good because the things, it's just more difficult to see your words and stuff. So, but I'm trying to think of some others. Like I said, Zero is excellent. Zero is basically about running a maze through using ropes. And so that's a lot of fun. I don't know. Hopefully that helped. On the chart, the download for the handout, it does list the ages, the age appropriateness on those. So you will find the ones that are like 5 and up on there. Thanks for coming, everyone. Have a great day.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.